to him a little bit about football. He is Tiki Barber, former Giants running back, WFAN Afternoon Drive, and of course, CBS Sports. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. As always, Tiki, thank you so much for joining us. How are you,
Tiki?
How are you doing?
Pleasure, boys. I'm doing great. How are you all?
We're good. I mean, Guardians got in the playoffs yesterday, so, I mean, we're feeling good about that.
We live in Cleveland, Ohio. They're making playoffs. The sun's out. Man, we're over the moon.
How much champagne did you all drink afterwards? As a team, because you saw what happened with the Yankees. They had a champagne party after they clinched the day before, went out all night, and then lost the next day because they had a day game.
That's like playing basketball in Miami. It's pretty much a written, you know, you're losing the next day, right? I mean, we all know that. Tiki, let me ask you this. I just think it's interesting because the Guardians still have a chance to win the Central. Do you champagne again?
No, absolutely not.
They're going to do champagne again. That's the word on the street.
God, come on. I had this issue with the Yankees, and they went out. Jazz Chisholm, who we love, since he got traded from the Miami Marlins, is doing Instagram Live videos basically saying, yeah, we out here partying. I don't give a bleep that we have a day game tomorrow. And I said, look, if the only way I'm forgiving him for this is if he hits a home run. He hit a damn home run. So I got to forgive him, but they lost the game. So it's frustrating. But you're right. There's so much more to play for. The number one overall seed is so important in baseball, especially for the Yankees, because as we've seen over the years, when they play on the road, they struggle in the postseason. When they play at home, they actually are pretty much undefeated in most of the series that they have. They just haven't had a bunch of home series over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, baseball's not scared to pull out the champagne, ever. Could you imagine,
no.
Like, if you won a wild card game, would you pull out the champagne after that?
No.
No.
Dude, when we won the NFC Championship game in 2000, I don't remember doing anything. I don't remember alcohol in the locker room. I remember a bunch of random dudes in the locker room, like, what are you doing here? Like, who are you? But I don't remember having, like, crazy parties, and we were going to the Super Bowl after that.
Well, you know, Tiki, it's an 162-game slog to get you there instead of 16 individual car crashes that you guys went through.
Yeah, I guess it's worth it. I guess I can get it.
I'm with you, Tiki. So we're on the same page. What are your thoughts on Browns Giants this weekend? And I mean, are the Giants what the record says they are? Are they really 0-2?
Yeah. And look, the first game we talked about it on our show. That really felt like a preseason game. It felt like nobody was on the same team. The Minnesota Vikings just went bonkers on us. Sam Darnold, who has been a journeyman, you know, after leaving the Jets, was 10 for 10, or I think actually 13 for 13 to start the game, which, you know, in some ways is not unexpected because our secondary is young here. It's, you know, Jason Pinnock, who's 27, is the vet, and he's a free agent. He came as a free agent a couple of years ago. So it's a young secondary. That's a new scheme under Shane Bowen. So it's a little bit learn as we go, and they look better in week two against the Commanders, but a frustrating loss in that game because we lost our kicker. The dynamic kickoff, he had a groin injury, kicked it off. The Commanders return it for a touchdown, ultimately gets called back, but in the chase down, he pulls his hamstring, and now we don't have a kicker. And so we missed all three extra points, and we become the first team in NFL regular season history, because it did happen in the postseason, to score three touchdowns, allow none, and lose the game. So that's the frustration that we're dealing with. So the record isn't really telling the full story because it's nuanced once you dig into it, but it's a little bit of frustration from a fan base that expected a little bit more, especially against some of the weaker teams on our schedule.
Former Giants running back Tiki Barber joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. All right, Tiki, can you buy enough Malik Nabor stock?
No. Not at all, because he's going to get targeted every other play. Last weekend, I think he had 18 of the 27 targets. And like, if teams are going to go play single high, if they're going to put a man look, it doesn't necessarily have to be man coverage, but if they're going to put a man look on Malik Nabor, the Giants are going to target him. And it's the best that they can do, because unlike a lot of teams and where they've started to go, There aren't tight end targets. We had no tight end targets last weekend. And we have some pretty good tight ends. They're just young. and not trustworthy yet. And so Malik Nabers is going to get all the burn. He dropped the pass at the end of the game, so he's still learning. If he had caught it, maybe they win that football game. But Malik Nabers is as advertised. He's a humble kid, despite some of his bravado that we all saw at the draft. And I think he's going to grow into one of those really good ones. LSU is becoming a factory, man. They're pumping out these wide receivers. So if you're in need of one, go look at LSU.
All right, and we heard about this. What, it was after the game last night, wasn't it? We're talking about this too high. I mean, this is like the blown-out story of the week about – defensive coverage and oh, it was Mel Kiper that said
Mel
last
Kiper
night.
Yeah, get up going off.
What are your thoughts on that? I don't know. To me, I think sometimes when it comes to fans on that, it might be a little too much in the weeds. But I know what we're talking about.
You know? Yeah, they don't understand. You know what I mean?
Right.
Fans don't get it, so you can't dig deeply into it. But the crux of it is, too high looks are generally are zone looks, and so there should be space to run the football. But they're so confusing nowadays, and they're always trying to disguise and, you know, confuse these young quarterbacks in the NFL. But I think what it's created, and this has been fun for me as a former running back, you've started to see teams truly commit to running the football. You've seen them get scheming to run the football, because it felt like for about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, the run play was like a breather play. It's like, let me dial up as many pass, you know, concepts as I can, and then I'm going to run the football just so I can get to my next pass play. You know what I mean? And I think that now with Kyle Shanahan's tree starting to spread throughout the NFL, you're seeing schemed run plays, right? You see it in Miami. You see it down in New Orleans with the Saints, you know, with Clint Kubiak. You see it in Houston with Shane Waldron. I mean, not Shane Waldron, with Bobby Slowick. So there's a bunch of, like, really cool run schemes that we've seen early on in the season so far. And I love it. I think it's great.
All right, do you think this means that in the future running backs will be valued maybe like the way they should be? And it drives me nuts. The game I love, like, has great running backs in it. And we've gone so – the teams treat running backs like they're a dime a dozen. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because they're worried about the wear and the injury issues that are going to happen. And so in my era, I would get 400 touches, right? I'd get 350 carries and, you know, 40 or 50 receptions. Nowadays, running backs are lucky if they get 250 total touches.
Yeah.
And so I think the value has diminished, one, because of that, right? They're splitting the carries. But two, think about the easiest ways to score in any sport. It's just, it's to have the big play, right? Hit a home run, you know, get a 20 plus yard play. In fact, that quadruples your EPA, your expected points, you know, per attempt when you have a big play. And the best way to get big plays, or the easiest way to get plays, is to throw the ball. And so running backs who, you know, have this little tiny percentage of big plays, I want to say it's like 12%, just it doesn't add up for scoring. It's too hard to go first down, first down, first down, first down, first down, first down. Now we're in the red zone. Let's try to score. It's easier if you can do big plays. And there's really one running back, and he's not even playing right now because he's got so much wear and tear. He's on IR. And Christian McCaffrey, who can create big plays even in the run game. And that's the one guy who got paid, right? He's making $19 million a year. Everybody else is 14 and under. And it's probably trending lower. I think the fourth highest paid running back is Ramondre Stevenson, and he's making $8 million. I mean, I've been retired for 18 years. That's $2 million more than I was making. You know what I mean? So it hasn't advanced like every other position exponentially has grown, you know, financial worthwise.
It does say something about the Browns, though, to stick by Nick Chubb. I mean, it would have been easy to say.
100%.
You know, so I think that's – and Browns fans, I mean – Nick is absolutely loved here, and we're hoping that maybe we can see him in week 5. But it does say something about the Browns franchise that the investment is still there, no matter how the rehab turns out for Nick Chubb. So, you know, there's one other story out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I did see some of his off-season squatting videos.
Yeah.
Dude is a monster. So it's worth hanging on to him, because I think when he comes back, he's going to be stronger than ever.
Tiki Barber joining us, former Giants running back, now doing afternoons with WFAN on the North Upstate Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So week one of the Browns, Deshaun Watson came out, and the whole team in general, and it was, we'll call it poor.
Week two looked a little bit better. Offensive side, right. It seemed to click a little bit better. What are your thoughts watching the Browns offense this season?
Yeah, well, at least you got a W. I know that was an ugly-ish game against the Jags this past weekend. I think Trevor Lawrence he's just regressed. It just is what it is. But, you know, when I look at the Browns, I see a team that wants to run the ball. I heard the clip you guys played of Joel talking before I came on. Run the ball, lean on the defense, create opportunities that way so that they get worn out, and it gives you an advantage. I think week one was, again, I don't want to say it's like a preseason, but it felt like that. It felt like the Cowboys had a perfect game plan. They jumped on you early. You got out to a 20-3 lead at halftime, and it was just kind of cruising from then on for the Cowboys. And the Browns were skitterish, and then just couldn't ever find their footing. Week two felt better, right? There was a bunch of sustained drives. Early on, they got points, and I think the one thing I worry about is all of the distraction around Deshaun Watson. I don't think it permeates the locker room, but it becomes a question that gets asked over and over and over and over again. And it's hard enough to focus on whoever you're game planning against. And now you got to throw in all this other stuff, which gets frustrating, even if it's not really a distraction in that locker room. Those are the things that need to get cleaned up. The other thing is there seems to be a little disconnect between Deshaun and Amari. His catch, I saw the catch percentage. It's the lowest in the league, under 30%. He's a difference maker, and you got to find ways to create space for him so that he can get involved early and do what he does, right? He's paid to be one of these elite players, and he's not, the first couple of weeks, he hasn't been that.
What do you attribute that to, Tiki? I mean, I don't know, maybe from your experience, maybe Eli had an issue getting into Amari Toomer at some point or another. If it's something along those lines, like, is it just like a hiccup between two guys, or is it contract obligations? Like,
no,
what do you think, man?
I think it's just a hiccup between two guys, because you know that they're both talented. You know that they both have the skill to do it. I think your coordinator can help you out, right? He can make it easier for them. Ken Dorsey, he can make it easier to just scheme things, right? Just get in his hands, make him feel comfortable and used and utilized. And that it grows upon itself, right? When you know that you're a big part of what an offense is trying to do. Right now, it doesn't feel like Amari Cooper is part of what the Browns are trying to do. And I know that's not the case, but that's just what it looks like on film.
Hmm. Give me your perspective just from being in an NFL offense, when you have a team where the head coach is calling the plays, but the offensive coordinator is there. Like, right. I think it'd be tough to be an offensive coordinator and not be able to call the plays, but I always laugh about this.
Is.
You know, Jim Trussell once said, "Hey, if I'm not calling the plays, what am I doing as a head coach?" And I was like, think about that when he says that. And what's it like to be in that running back in that scenario?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I had it both, and it was all kind of in the same year when Jim Fossil was our head coach and Sean Payton was our offensive coordinator. It was after 2001, I believe it was. He kind of fired Sean in the middle of the season. It wasn't a big story because social media didn't take it and run with it, but he took back the play calling duties, and it felt good, but so different to have the head coach who's dealing with so many other things that you can't sit, stop, and have a conversation with them. You know what I mean? So you come to the sideline, you've run a series or whatever it may be, and you usually get over the sideline, you talk to the play call, and you're like, look, they're trying to do this to us. All right, they're doing X, Y, and Z, and it immediately translates into a new play call. But with a head coach, he's worried, still watching, obviously, down a distance for the defense. You know, do I need to call, throw a challenge flag? Like, all of these in-game management things just get, it's just one person removed from the decision maker. So it gets a little bit wonky at times, but Kevin Stefanski has been doing it for, 3 years now. So they should be used to it. And I think the new addition of Ken Dorsey maybe adds a complication, but I don't think it's something that's terminal in any way.
How tough is it as a player, Tiki, to overhaul an offensive scheme the way the Browns have? I mean, they've gone from the Shanahan Kubiak system over to more of a spread offense with Ken Dorsey. How tough is that?
Right. It's really tough because the language is different a little bit, but it's also the rules that you've spent, you know, 2 or 3 years learning are now also different. And especially when you get teams that are going to want to pressure you. You know, you think back to those, you remember the greatest show on turf, right?
Mm-hmm.
With
yeah.
Kurt Warner and all those guys. If someone was going to bring pressure, their rule was don't block it. We're not adjusting. We're not canning the play, you know, changing the play. We're going to beat it, right? I know as a quarterback and you know as a receiver, when you get pressure, when that third guy or second unblocked guy comes from your side, you're breaking off your route, the ball's going to come out, and you're going to get it completed. But when you have these new systems, especially when they're more spread, as a quarterback, you have to fix it, right? You're not going to stand up there and just get hit in the mouth or trust that one or two receivers are going to know exactly what to do. So what you see happening at the line of scrimmage, and you guys see this, watch the game, you'll see him. When a certain look comes, he'll stand up, he'll, you know, throw an audible, he'll can it, he'll reverse the play. He's trying to fix it. He's trying to fix the protection so that he has time to let the play that's called develop and get a completion. It's just a new set of rules which take some time to get comfortable in. That's the biggest difference when a system changes from what it was to, I think, what it is now when it's more spread.
All right, Tiki, as always, I got to ask you one last question because you were concerned about the Yankees. When they clinch, they party hardy. What about your Virginia Cavaliers or Coastal Carolina? And let's be honest, I mean, Myrtle Beach is a fun place to hang out. Could they get lulled in this weekend?
They're not partying. What are you talking about? I mean,
have you been to Coastal Carolina? Man, we drove through there with my son a couple. Oh, my God. Tiki,
I've heard.
No one's going to class down there. I asked the kid in the bookshop because we were looking at it, and I'm like, hey, what's it like to go to school here? And he was like, you know what it's like? It's like going to class and being on vacation every day.
Right. That's got to be nice. Well, it's a must-win for UVA. They had a bad loss last weekend, a big come-from-behind win the weekend before against Wake Forest. But I like our quarterback. Calandre, I think he's young. He makes some dumb decisions here and there, but I trust him. I trust that he's part of what could be a good future for Tony down there. You know, in his third year, I think this is now.
I think so.
For Tony Elliott, I think it's his third year. It's, you know, really it's recruiting. It's to them. It's about getting the best players and then holding on to those players, because you guys know with NIL, it's basically recruiting your own team as well as all the kids that are coming in as freshmen every single year. Otherwise, they transfer, because now it's, you know, it's free to transfer.
Yeah, Virginia to me is like one of those underrated campuses, because we've been there a couple times. We've gone through there.
Best, dude.
It's awesome.
Dude, we're sneaky party.
We're
not like Coastal Carolina, we're in your face party, but we're a sneaky party school.
As long as you can find a parking spot downtown, you're good to go.
No, it's impossible.
It's bad. Tiki, thank you. We always love talking to you. Anytime you got a home here in Cleveland with us, you know that, man.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate you, boys.
Thank you, Tiki.
Take care of yourself.
All right, Tiki Barber. Bye. Nice enough to join us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Let's talk a little bit about what Tiki had to say, especially when we were breaking down the offenses. So 216-474-0092.